Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. Welcome to episode number 294, and I am cruising in the Handgun World mobile studio. Still driving this old 2002 Honda Accord. Has 145,000 miles on it now. Anyway, let's see. This is an interesting week of podcasting here that I am going to do. First, I'm going to start with a couple of voicemails. And then I'm going to have an interview with Glenn Tate that I'll be presenting to you. We're going to talk about working man's armory. Pretty cool stuff. So I will just, hopefully that kind of piqued your interest there. And we'll be getting to the interview here with Glenn Tate in several minutes on this episode. I want to start by telling you all something, some terrific news. About a week, a little over a week ago, I got the all clear sign from my cancer doctor, my oncologist. The two biopsies that I had done after my recent PET scan showed no more cancer. So how about that? You know, it's hard for me not to choke up right now, folks, because all of you have been praying so hard for me, and you know, I've had some tough times the last 5 months or so. I've had some very tough times. Mainly what I've had a tough time with is believing that I was going to make it through this. That was the tough time. And so many of you have called in so many voicemails and emails of support and Facebook messages and telling me that you're praying for me. If you follow me on Facebook, you probably already know because I put a post up there. But if you don't follow me on Facebook, now you know. Please keep praying for my family and I. My wife is struggling with her. As you know, she got a diagnosis of ALS about a year and a half ago. The ice bucket challenge is great to see all the support, but you know, folks, there is no cure for ALS right now. And we're still not 100% sure that she has it because there's another doctor that disagrees with the diagnosis, but the bottom line is she's been struggling with some not so good symptoms. So keep my family in your prayers. I'm not 100% out of the woods. It is good that my cancer is in remission right now. They cannot call it cured. I'm not cured. I'm not cured until I've gone a few years without any return. But most importantly, I need to get through the next 12 months. If I get through the next 12 months without a relapse, I've got much better chances. But if it comes back within 12 months, then my chances are not as good. So please continue to keep praying for me that the cancer will stay in remission. But I can't tell you enough. I can't thank you enough. God is good, folks. And you folks that have been praying for me and sending your thoughts my way and things, it works, and I appreciate that very much. You can say that you played an important part in keeping me encouraged throughout the whole ordeal. So, anyway, let's move on now. Let's get on to some gun stuff here. A couple of voicemails came in. First of all, here's one that came in from California. So listen carefully, and I'll be on with some comments.
Hi, Bob. this is John from California. Just a couple of things. First off, thank you for all that you do. My wife's and I's prayers for you and your family for quick and permanent recovery are certainly there, period. One thing I was going to point out, you stated in your podcast 293 that the 6 Hour doesn't make a real live 1911, that they've modified it all. They do have their classic line, which is a mil-spec or thereabouts, a 1911 slab side, looks just like a Springfield or Colt or anything else. So I want to point that out, at least Sig Arms get a bad rep. Anyway, also, everybody keeps saying that it's a tragedy that Michael Brown was shot, and I wholeheartedly agree, but it's also a tragedy that Officer Wilson had his life changed personally and permanently with getting a beat down that actually broke his skull. I would say that would equal justification for what he felt he had to do, but again, like you say, there's waiting for all the facts to come in, but I think that he got beat up to the point that it crushed his skull, that that would tend to give a little bit of factual substantiation that he did what he needed to do. Just my opinion, and we'll wait for the rest of the facts. you take care of yourself. And again, our prayers and good thoughts are with you, sir. Bye-bye now.
Well, John, you're welcome. And thanks for reminding me of that. After I said that last week, after I'd already posted the podcast, I realized that, yes, Sig Sauer does make some traditional 1911s. So I was wrong about that. Thanks for correcting me, John. I appreciate that. You know, I'll say, Sig seems to be making some pretty good quality 1911s for the money that you pay for them. And I think that's good. Thanks for the prayers, John. I appreciate that. Again, you were one of those people that I was talking about earlier that helped me, keep me encouraged. And speaking of Sig 1911s, I carry mine in a Black Mamba holster by Concealment Solutions. I think I might try appendix carrying this pistol pretty soon. I'm going to get one of those ASP 2.0s. The ASP 2.0. ASP stands for Appendix Specific Platform, ASP. Appendix Specific Platform 2.0. It's Jason Christensen's second version of it. Love it, man! I love it. I use that holster for my Smith & Wesson Shield, and I also have one for my Glock 42. Probably going to be getting one for my Glock 26 pretty soon, and for this Sig Sauer RCS 1911. So, good stuff. Check out that holster. And John, thanks for the voicemail. Let's switch over to Brett from North Carolina.
Hey, Bob. Good afternoon. This is Brett in Charlotte, North Carolina. Just want to tell you how much we really enjoy your show. Been listening to it for 6 months now religiously. Reason I'm calling is we seem to have a shortage of advanced pistol training classes in the North Carolina area. Charlotte has an abundance of shooters, but the majority of the classes being offered at facilities around here are all very basic CCW or Pistol 101 type things. So if you could help us out and schedule some training down here in North Carolina, I know there's a good audience for your product, and we'd certainly love to see you and Ben get down here whenever you can. Keep us in mind, please. And we hope to see you in the Charlotte, North Carolina area sometime in 2015. Thank you so much for your work and your enjoyable podcast. Have a good day.
Well, Brett, thanks for the compliment. Thanks for listening to my show every week. Appreciate that. I'm going to try to fix that problem for you. I'm going to get together with Ben Branham, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, and we're going to finalize our 2015 schedule, and we'll try to see if we can put something up on out there in North Carolina and do Beyond Concealed Carry for you. Maybe we'll make it a two-day class. Let me say something about the classes that Ben and I do. We'll travel pretty much anywhere as long as it makes sense, as long as it makes financial sense and sense for the students out there. We'll pretty much go anywhere. If you want to bring us out there, all you have to do is be a host for us. Just find a range that will allow us to draw from a holster and move and shoot and things like that, preferably if they've got at least a few steel targets that we can shoot. And we don't need a lot of long distances if we're going to do a pistol class. And just, you know, help us promote the class in your local area. Basically, if you'll do that legwork of finding a range that's reasonable in price and that doesn't mind having outside instructors like us, you can find our biographies on our website, and you can also find our biographies on the Shooters Club website. If you go to shootersclubmembers.com, even if you're not a member of our Shooters Club, you can find our biographies on our website, shootersclubmembers.com. You can see it there. You can go to any of the class listings, and you can send the range a link. You can also send them a link to our class reviews, and they can look at some of the class reviews and see what students are saying about us. So if the range owner, you know, doesn't know too much about us, you can either have them listen to our podcast or have them look at our websites, stuff like that. And I'm fully insured to be teaching at any range that I wish. So see if you can put that together and host us. But anyway, Brett, we'll try to get out there. We'll try to get out there to North Carolina. That's something that I'll talk to Ben about, and we'll see how that happens. And, you know, we've been out to Seattle, and we've been to Arkansas. We've had some folks ask us if we're interested in coming out even as far as Alaska, which might be interesting. Stay tuned for that. We might be able to make kind of a pretty cool announcement. Possible. Not going to say for sure, but it's possible if we can put enough folks together, we'll come up there to Alaska. As far as the lower 48, you know, if you can give us 10 people, then we can travel for a minimum of 10 students. If it's less than that, it might not make financial sense. But anyway, get a hold of me if you want more details. You can email me at bob@handgunworld.com. But Brett and Charlotte, we will definitely try to fix that issue for you and see if we can get out there and do some intermediate or even advanced level training out there in the North Carolina area. Now, I do want to say this about 2015. Next year, I want to take more training. I didn't take as much training this year as I wanted to. In other words, I wasn't a student enough. I need to become a student again for a while. It's not that I don't want to do any training next year. I do want to do some training. Next year, I want to do some instructing. Let's put it that way. I'm saying the wrong words here. I want to do some instruction next year. But I want to cut back on the number of classes where I'm an instructor, and I need to become a student more. And you know, you probably won't hear a lot of instructors say that, but you'll hear me say that. I am a firm believer, and I hope you'll agree, that a good instructor also becomes a student often. You never stop learning. No matter what you do, you never stop learning. And just when you think you know it all, that's the dangerous part. Because you don't know it all. Not everybody knows it all. And just because someone becomes an instructor, they feel like they don't, some people feel like they don't need to train anymore. They don't need to become a student. I need to become a student. So I plan on taking at least a couple training classes next year and doing some more competition shooting as well. Because competition shooting keeps my draw and my trigger press and my sight alignment and stuff like that, keeps that sharp. And that's also good practice in moving and shooting. So I'm going to be doing more of being a student next year and, of course, podcasting about it and maybe even doing some videos on it and things like that. So the number of classes that I'll be involved in instructing next year will probably be fewer than 2014. So if you want to train with me and train with Ben, you may want to strongly consider, even if you have to travel a little bit, getting to one of our classes. We're also going up to South Dakota next year, and you'll be hearing more about that coming up. So let's take a quick break, and then we'll get in. Oh, you know what? Before the break, a lot of folks want to know how to leave a voicemail. I do say it on almost every podcast, but I'll say it again. 210-646-1727. That's the number. 210-646-1727. Or you can go to handgunworld.com and click the Call Me button, and you can leave a voicemail that way. Hey, and if you want email notifications, if you want to be emailed every time I put up a podcast or anytime I make any kind of a change to the website or anything like that, you can sign up for email notifications at handgunworld.com. There's a link for that in the margin on the right-hand side. Okay, quick break, and then I'll be back with Glenn Tate, the author of the book series, 299 Days. Stay tuned.
England, Wales, Scotland, Australia, Canada, and 12 other industrialized and largely disarmed nations have higher violent crime rates than the U.S. This is according to a Dutch Ministry of Justice multinational survey. According to that survey, England and Australia are twice as vicious as America, with higher rates of robberies, muggings, and assaults. Switzerland, a well-armed nation, has a violent crime rate about the same as ours. Disarmed countries are dangerous countries, and America's few disarmed cities are the most dangerous in the Union. This is no coincidence. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Okay, during the break, I also want to mention that Ben and I are teaching a night fighting class in San Antonio in December, and we're going up to Dallas to teach pistol fighting dynamics, the art of making the first hit. That's going to be in the DFW area. So for all of my Dallas, North Texas, even Southern Oklahoma folks, come on, train with us at Pistol Fighting Dynamics, November 8th in Dallas, and I think it's December 6th, if I'm not mistaken, in San Antonio for our night fighting class. Don't forget about Ben's rifle class, October 11th. And then don't forget about my Beyond Concealed Carry class that I am teaching in Northern California. That class is filling up. It's starting to fill up pretty well. We had a slow start, but it's starting to fill up now. So, if you're going to be in the Northern California area, October 18th, Saturday, I'm teaching Beyond Concealed Carry. I'm teaming up with Scott Sylvester, the guy from One Weapon, Any Tool. He's the law enforcement officer that interviewed with me several weeks back. He's going to help me out with the class as well. That's going to be at the San Joaquin Gun Club near Stockton, California, Saturday, October 18th. All of these you can find signups at the website handgunworld.com. All right, let's get to the interview with Glenn Tate. Okay, joining me for the interview segment of this show, I've got Glenn Tate, author of the book series 299 Days, and I got Joel Edwards from Working Man's Armory. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you guys donating your time. You know, I always tell people when they listen to this that guests donate their time gladly, and so that's why I ask them to show a little love back to you guys as well.
Well, and podcasters donate their time. I mean, it takes a lot of work to put a show on, and there are some fixed costs to this too. And a lot of people don't realize that. So thank you, Bob.
Well, thanks for bringing that up. Glenn, let's start for just a couple minutes. First of all, I want to say thanks for a great class in SQUIM at Fort Discovery. Thanks for showing up. Tell Powell that he's an amazing shooter. That guy is very well trained, and I'm very impressed. And I appreciate you putting it together and being there for us.
Oh, it was an absolute blast. Got to meet you in person. I mean, we've spoken so many times. When I walked in the room and I heard your voice in person, it was weird. It was like, shouldn't I be listening to this on headphones or something? I mean, he's right there. And that was neat. And you know, Ben was fun to meet. And it was a great class. And Powell and I had a fantastic time. I think it was interesting because a lot of people in the class were readers of the book series. And they probably wondered, okay, in these books, this Powell guy, I mean, is he really a 6-foot Korean gunfighter who sells insurance? And is he any good? Because, you know, it's fiction. I'm sure things got exaggerated. And I think he showed some folks that he's a pretty amazing pistol shooter. So that was good to see that, you know, he's legit. And I felt like saying, hey, I told you so. But it was great. And the weather was perfect. Bob, is August in Western Washington not the most magnificent climate ever?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. You know what? When we do this again, we're going to do it first or second week in August. It's terrific.
It was great.
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, it was about like 75 or 76, maybe 80 at the most, and gorgeous and sunny. It was terrific.
The only guy who didn't think the weather was spectacular was the guy from Alaska. It was like, you know, too warm for him. I'm like, really? It's 75 degrees. How's that too warm?
There were two guys from Alaska. And Joel, you know what I wanted to say to you? Glenn shot me an email with a video of yours. So the first exposure I ever had to Working Man's Armory was listening to you on video. It was a great promotional video. So seems like you got a pretty good venture going there.
Yeah, it's starting that way. It's building up slowly, but we're getting there. And you know, with Glenn's support and the support of the team, I think we've really got something good going on. And I'm not looking to make a gigantic corporation anytime soon. I'd rather take it slow and get it right the first time around than screw something up and end up failing. So we're just taking our time at it and going where we're pushed to go.
Well, I love the name Working Man's Armory, and you know, your demeanor when I watched you on video, you come across like an everyday guy, like an everyday working man, and I think it's awesome. I think that's great, and you put a lot of care and effort into your rifles. Why don't you both you guys talk a little bit about, first of all, why should a working guy have an AR-15 and train with one?
You know, in my opinion, every household out there, every at least every male member and most of the females as well, if they've got the confidence to, the self-confidence that it takes to own a weapon, should own a weapon. I'm personally biased towards the AKs and the AR-15s, and I think that it's a good weapon for any household to have. It's so versatile that it can be used home defense, hunting, target practice, just general enjoyment, civil defense, whatever type of need that arises, that one rifle will pretty much take care of everything you need.
Yeah, I think so. Glenn, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I would echo that, and I get, of course, more into the prepping part of it, and they are ubiquitous. One of my favorite words means they're everywhere and common, and, you know, parts are everywhere. They're really easy to use. I think AR-15s are the most ergonomic battle rifles, or really any kind of rifle out there, and they're really easy to use. Soft recoil, which is a big deal, and they're just fun. Let's not forget the fun factor. You know, I went straight into the kind of the prepping thing, but they're just doggone fun, and they can be accessorized so well. You can put anything on there. The price of ARs has really fallen. There's some really, really good ARs out there for under $1,000 now. And, you know, there's some really good ones for more than that, too. I mean, all the prices have come down. I guess what I'm saying is now is probably the best time in a couple years to get an AR-15 or get a second or third or tenth.
A tenth, I like that. Well, I really think it's turned into America's rifle, even though that's not what AR stands for. It's kind of cool because it has turned into America's rifle, and it's, if I'm not mistaken, the AR-15 platform is the best-selling rifle in America today, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, if it's not, it's right up there close. You know, like Glenn said, it's the modularity of it and just the parts intercompatibility between models is fantastic. If you wear anything out or break something or just want to change something up to have it a different style or a different feel, it's not like it's real hard to do it. You can usually get Amazon or somebody to ship you within 2 days.
Yeah, that's what's nice. That is nice. You know, I took some people out shooting once that had never shot an AR-15 before, and I tell you what, one woman that shot it, she just was amazed. I mean, you know, we had spent that afternoon shooting rifles and shotguns and handguns, and she said at the end of it, clearly her favorite part was shooting the AR-15.
And that's almost universal. Anytime that we go shooting with people, the ARs are always the hit over the handguns, over the shotguns, over the AKs, over anything. That 5.56 ARs. Is such a fantastic cartridge for anybody from the littlest guy to the biggest guy out there to shoot.
And there's not much that you can't do with it. With the right barrel and the right cartridges, you know, you can hunt with it. They're great. I mean, we all know their effectiveness for self-defense. And, you know, I think was it Clint Smith or Jeff Cooper? One of them said that the pistol is used to keep people away from you, and the AR-15 is to keep people off your porch.
Yeah, and I've heard the need for the pistol is to fight your way back to the AR-15.
That too, yeah. So from a prepper standpoint, you know, Glenn, maybe you can weigh in on this too. You know, if even half of what happens, what you write about in your books, if even half of that comes to pass, which I believe it will, tell us about the role that the working man's AR is going to play in that.
Yeah, well, the first thing that comes to mind is when you've got working men and women, you got regular people, and ARs are dispersed and distributed among a large segment of the population. I'm a political guy. You know what I do for a living. And the first thing that springs to mind is the chances of some people in government deciding to be bad go way down when AR-15s are widely distributed. And that's not a crazy thought. It's actually in the Federalist Papers. I mean, it was well written about when this constitution of this country was being formed. And so it is a serious deterrent. But assuming bad things happen and it's go time, AR-15s are great for keeping bad people off your porch. I think that's probably their primary use in this situation. They can be used by anybody, mainly defense. I don't know that too many of us out there ever want to use these things in an offensive way, but of course offense and defense get blurred together. in these sorts of situations. Compact, light, anyone can use them. And so it would be for defending yourself, defending others, and that's going to be an absolute prerequisite to making it through all this stuff. Food's important, water's important, medical care is important. All these things are important. But if there are a bunch of bad guys coming around, you need to have that not happen, and an AR-15 or several is a great way to prevent that from happening. Plus, and this is a legitimate thing, I think people downplay this a little bit, but in my opinion, the fact that AR-15s look scary to people, I don't find them scary, but I mean the fact that they look like a serious rifle, I mean, if you're a bad guy and you're going to come into a neighborhood and you see a bunch of guys with, you know, $1,200 Beretta double barrel 12 gauges that are beautifully, you know, milled and balanced and all that other stuff, I'm less afraid of that than I am one or more people with AR-15. So it's not like they're a magic talisman that will scare bad guys away, but the fact that it's an AR-15 adds a bit of a statement. And if you can avoid a fight, that's the best thing. So maybe the bad guys move on to another neighborhood. That's bad for the other neighborhood, but it's good for your neighborhood. And so I think the best thing you can have along with a really reliable handgun would be an AR-15 in a situation that I believe is coming soon.
Or two or three or ten.
That's right.
Right? Joel, what do you think on that?
I'd have to pretty much agree. The AR-15 is, in that scenario, is going to be your first level of force, is just that show of force. And I think someone who can project the attitude, can display the rifle, is going to stand a much better chance of not getting into a gunfight and not getting into an attack situation. And then obviously the easiest way to win a gunfight is not to get in the first place. So there's always something to be said just for a little bit of intimidation.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I watched your video, and by the way, for everybody who is listening to this, I'm going to put a link to Joel's video in the show notes for this episode. But when I was watching it, I was very impressed with your appeal to just the everyday guy. So talk about, what is the working man's AR-15? Talk about what sets it apart from some of the others that you can go down to your local gun shop and buy.
Well, what we try to do is really supply a high-end, high-quality rifle at a price that's more affordable than some of your really known names out there. I mean, I'll never be able to compete with the Bushmasters and the Colts. But again, when you buy a Bushmaster or a Colt or one of these other big nationally known mega rifle producers, you're going to get a basic rifle. There's nothing really special, nothing customized. They're just sort of the bare bones mass produced base model rifles. And then you can go to the other extreme and go with the mid-size manufacturers who are very well known. You've got LaRue, Novaska, and that level of guys, and you're paying well over $2,000 for a rifle. So I'm trying to hit that midpoint area, so that the guy who's sitting there dreaming about the $2,400 rifle can look at our stuff and say, hey, that's got all the same specs and qualities and checks done on it, and I can get it for $1,000 less than the other companies. And that's going to get the guy who can't afford the $2,400 rifle but isn't quite happy with the $800 rifle, that's going to give him a better option to choose from. And also, I want to be that company that doesn't get so big that we can't handle everything on a personal basis. You know, I talk to people every day on the phone about mostly custom builds and my opinions on what they should do. And I don't ever want to get so big that I can't still do that. I hate that some companies you call up and get a customer service person who really doesn't do anything with firearms other than look at a tech chart or read from a manual. You know, we want to be able to provide the average everyday guy with a rifle that from day one to the rest of his life, he's going to be proud of and is going to function wonderfully for him.
Yeah. Well, and in that video that I saw, you were talking about some of the parts you use in your ARs for the working man's ARs. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we use only domestic parts. We don't import anything from China. We don't get anything, you know, made cheaply overseas and then bring it in and rebrand it as our own. We, we source everything domestically, all the way down to the springs, pins, hammers, and the like. We try to use smaller companies that can listen to us and our needs and give us more of what we want, and as well as have a really good quality control on the parts that they're putting out and a genuine love for what they're doing. They're not just in it to make money. They're in it because this is the business that gives them the joy in their life. So all of our barrels, all of our rails, you know, all the little small parts are mostly from smaller companies that we like to support and that in turn enjoy supporting us.
Yeah, cool. Glenn, I'm sure you've probably given some of Joel's rifles a run.
Absolutely. You saw it in the video. They're absolutely amazing. And, you know, because Joel's a manufacturer, we were able to do some testing and evaluation of some of his fully automatic pieces, and that's an absolute joy, and that's depicted a lot in the video. My favorite rifle of all of his, I'll let him talk about because he's better at this than I am, is, and I never thought this would happen when I was sitting down and writing this book that no one was ever going to read and I'd probably never find a publisher and all that other stuff. 17th Irregulars AR-15 by Working Man's Armory, and it's, I don't know, it's all the pieces. We designed it. The team sat down. I'll remember there were all these conference calls. You know, we had one iPhone, and we were trying to use the speaker phones, and the team would get together on Wednesday evenings, and we'd talk to Joel, and we'd send, you know, parts and drawings back and forth, and it's outfitted the way we like our rifles, the optics and the rails and all this other stuff. And it was so cool to have a series of conversations and emails and look at drawings, and it's a cool thing. It's basically, we got to say, if we could make an AR-15, here's how we'd make it. And then poof, it showed up one day and it fired amazingly, and it was awesome. So I'll leave all that to Joel, but that's my favorite Working Man's Armory gun of all time. The finish on it, by the way, I don't know what you did, Joel, but it's otherworldly. It's amazing.
Well, talk about that, Joel.
Yeah, that particular rifle, it was a really fun project to do, and I was overseas at the time when we were making all those conference calls, so I'm really happy that we were actually able to get through and everything was going smoothly there. But the rifle is it's a 16-inch AR-15. It's got a mid-length gas system. It's on my billet upper and lowers. Barrels are 4150 steel, nitrided. So you get really good wear resistance. You get excellent accuracy from them. And just from front to back, again, you know, we've used the best pieces that we can for that particular rifle. The furniture's all Magpul. I think that the stock's a CTR. The grip's a Myad. The rail is from a phenomenal little company called SLR Rifle Works down in Florida. And the rail will offer it in the choice of either with Keymod attachments or the new Magpul's new M-Lock attachment. Magpul flip-up sights. It's got a precision delivery systems gamma brake on the front, which, as Glenn can tell you, just completely almost eliminates the recoil and muzzle rise off that thing. It's about the flattest shooting rifle that I've ever shot. But I think the really neat thing that we're doing with Glenn is we're doing an entire package that we'll call the 299 Days package. And the lower receiver's got the 17th Irregular logo engraved on the side
cool.
of it. And it comes as a sort of grab-and-go kit. You know, if you order this package, you'll get a Pelican case delivered to you to your dealer. And in that Pelican case is the 17th Irregular rifle, fully outfitted with flashlights, aim point, red dot sights, sling, 10 magazines, cleaning kit, copy of Glenn's book, pretty much everything that you would possibly need to go to the range except for ammo. So, you know, do your transfer at your dealer, grab the kit, buy a couple boxes of ammo, head to the range, and you're ready to go. And obviously everything that we build has a lifetime common sense warranty on it, which basically says if it breaks and it's probably our fault, we'll take care of it. You don't need to worry about that.
You know, Joel, I think that's the first time I've heard common sense warranty. That's pretty good.
Yeah, if you're doing chin-ups on your rifle and it breaks, I'm not going to fix it. You know, you can pay me to fix it. But if in the regular course of shooting, if something breaks, if there's a fault in there that's obviously mine, you know, we'll take care of it.
So it's got 17th irregulars on the lower.
It does. It does. The left side of the lower has the 17th irregular logo engraved on there, and the serial number series that we'll be doing for these lowers will all be 17th-, and then the four digits.
That's cool, Glenn. Which book are they going to get?
Oh, probably book one. But you know what? Yeah. Since this is a small company, and Joel's a laid-back guy, I mean, if somebody wants a different one, we could probably make that happen. But the standard thing would be book one, because that's the gateway thing that gets people involved in this, and that's the one people want usually the most. So, yeah, let's say book one, but Joel and I could work something out. I could send other ones if need be.
Yeah.
And since we custom make everything as it comes in, so making changes to a rifle is not difficult at all. If you live in California and you want one of these, but you need it to be California compliant, put it in the notes. We'll make it California compliant. We don't even charge for that because we feel bad enough having to
yeah,
through that.
Yeah, no kidding. It's worse enough that it has to be California or probably now Colorado compliant too, right?
Right, exactly.
You know what, Joel, I think you were mentioning in the video, I think, if I heard this correctly, the barrels are 1-7 twist, correct?
Correct. We do 1-7 mainly just because it handles such a variety. We've also got some 1-8, so if a customer says that, you know, they'd rather have a 1-8 out of the same barrel, we can do that too. But 1-7 is generally our standard, just because you get such a range of calibers out of, or of bullet weights and sizes out of that.
Yeah. What's your approximate turnaround time?
From the order to shipping can be anywhere from 3 days to 2.5 weeks, depending if they want Cerakote or something like that, or if I've got a part that's on back order. But on full complete rifles, no more than 3 weeks at the most for a custom.
That's short.
Yeah, it's not bad, and it's because I limit the amount of business that I take in, which keeps my quality up and my production times down. I don't want somebody to wait 6 months for a rifle that they've already paid for. You know, I've been through that myself. That's horrible.
Yeah, people shouldn't have to wait 6 months for anything that they've already paid for.
Yeah, and right now with the industry, everything's pretty much catching up since the little panic, and supplies are coming back. And for a long time, as I'm sure you guys are aware, bulk carry groups and barrels were hard to get a hold of. And for me as a small company, you know, I can't compete with the big boys who are buying 1,000 units at a time. So I've had to wait, but everything's starting to come back around again.
You know, Joel, I'm glad you mentioned the panic, the recent Sandy Hook panic and things. You know, I want people to realize who are listening to this, it's not a matter of if something like that's going to happen. It's a matter of when. And I think people need to be, they've got to have that prepper mindset. You've got to have your rifles. You got to have your pistols, your shotguns, your ammo. Get them now. Get them now while they're available. Get them now while they're reasonably priced still, because that's going to happen again. Don't you think, Glenn?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. No, it's a matter of time before there's even something as, you know, tragic but mundane as another kind of Sandy Hook thing, or it could be a much bigger problem that's going to cause an even bigger run on guns. And one of the things I always think about is that not kicking yourself feeling. For example, with 22 ammunition, after the first scare, about 2008 or 2009, I went and got bricks of 22, you know, about once a week, and they were about $11 to $15. And so now, when people are paying $50 or more for a brick, I just kind of shrug. I mean, I've got plenty, and that kind of thing. That not kicking yourself feeling when you sit there. I'll never forget. I went into a gun store actually in Texas, Bob, and there was, you know, $64.99 for, you know, 525 rounds of Federal 22 long rifle, 36 grain, and I thought, wow, I'm glad I got this at $15. And so don't kick yourself, because ARs will get scarce again. And it's a matter of time, could be weeks, months, I don't even know. And get them now while prices are low and availability is there. Then you won't be kicking yourself. You know you need one. And so get it while it's available and less expensive.
With regards to 22 ammo, I'm one of those guys kicking myself. That's me. I mean, yeah, I should have got the bricks when they were, what did you say, 11 bucks?
Yeah, they were 11 bucks to 15 bucks when I got most of them. And I have this habit that annoys people around me. On things like food and ammunition, I keep the receipts and I throw them in the tub. And I sit there and I go, oh, look, $15. That is annoying. I apologize for being annoying to everyone around me. But I do actually keep track of this stuff because you know what the lesson is? I mean, people around me that are seeing the food or the ammo are obviously very close people, team guys and that kind of thing. It really brings the point home to them that if you get this stuff – when it's available and less expensive, and when you have the money, don't go into debt for this stuff. We've talked about that, Bob.
Yes.
But get it while you can because you're going to be much better off. I mean, we all know you're going to use an AR-15. You're going to shoot 22 long rifle. This stuff doesn't go bad. This isn't like a big brick of cheese that's going to, you know, like spoil or something like that. I mean, this stuff lasts forever. You're going to use it. Why not get it when it's cheaper?
And I'd like to add to that the AR-15 and the 22 long rifles, you know, they're so incredibly popular. Nearly everybody has one or is getting one. And if you ever needed to sell some ammo or buy some ammo from somebody, it's so common that it's going to be easy to sell off if you have to sell it or easy to buy if you have to buy it from somebody.
Yeah, exactly. And look at the price of 5.56 and 223 ammunition now. It is really fallen. Everything we're saying about AR-15s and 22 long rifle, I think, also applies to 5.56/223. Get plenty of it now. Get a good, affordable rifle and maybe spend that difference that you would have to spend to get, you know, a really tricked out rifle. Spend that on ammunition and magazines. Don't forget the magazines.
And training.
And training, yes.
You know, but
it's definitely a buyer's market right now. There's absolutely no reason if you've got the cash and want a rifle, now is the time you need to buy. You know, obviously, I'd like you to buy one of my rifles, but when you can get a Colt 6920 for under $900, that's insane. There's no reason not to pick that rifle up if you can afford it. And like Glenn said, you're seeing magazines for $8 a piece when you buy them in 10 packs. Load up because that's dealer price. There's so much inventory in the system right now that the prices are low, and that event that causes a panic could be happening right now. So you never know when the next rush is going to be. Get on it while it's in your favor.
And you know what, Joel? Good point. Just to remind people, in case they may have forgotten, shortly after Sandy Hook, a Magpul 30-round P-Mag, there were people gouging those things for like $85 or something like that.
And there were people buying them.
And there were people buying them at that, too. That's right. Yeah. In fact, I was offered, like, I think somebody offered me over $100 for my 33-round Glock 9mm magazine. And like an idiot, I didn't sell it. I probably should have. But then I was one of those guys worried about, well, could this ever get, you know, maybe I can't replace this. Little did I know.
Right. So I keep two levels of accessories. I have ones that will not be sold, and anything over that level is fair game as far as my personal stuff goes.
So you have one set of accessories that will not be sold, and then you have some that might be.
I've got a quantity that I know I want to keep on hand for personal use. Anything over that is totally up for barter.
Ah, that's good. And barter. You're saying something that's near and dear to my heart. I love bartering. You know. And by the way, I want to say something about that since you brought it up, Joel. Bartering doesn't have to, you don't have to wait until the stink hits the fan to do that. You know, hey, I've been bartering since about 1986 or so. I used to be involved with a company. We did sales training, and we used to go around, fly all over the country doing sales training. And we used to trade out our training for things like rental cars and cell phones back in the day when we had those big brick phones and things like that. So, you know, you can barter in all kinds of ways.
Yeah, I trade out labor on a regular basis with other gunsmiths and such. If they've got something that they can't handle, but I can, we'll swap labor easily. That's always a good deal for both of us.
Yeah. Now, Glenn, I want to ask you something. I know you're a real big fan of the AK, especially the AK-74. And on Joel's website, his Working Man's Armory website, he's got an AKM-47. I imagine you've shot that.
Yeah, it's on the on the video, amazing. The one that he brought with brought along, and the one that he shoots in the very first scene of the video is a fully automatic AK-47, which is mind blowing. 7.62x39, I think, is a great full auto cartridge. It's not too much. Although I looked at some of the videos I took on my phone that didn't make it onto the website, and the last five or six rounds of that magazine, I was getting pushed back pretty hard. But that's what CrossFit is for, right? It's amazing. It's really, really great gun. I've been praising the AR, and I have a lot of love for the AK too. I'll tell you, the AK-74, and you know I'm an AK-74 fanatic. That Joel brought out was amazing. And Joel does AKs also. The ARs are the main focus right now, I think, but the AKs are kind of his love, and they are spectacular. I like good old, you know, when I got them, $430, you know, AK-74s, and they work great and all that. They're not spectacular, and the accuracy isn't amazing and all that other stuff. But when you get a 74 or a 47 that is really done right, it is just a work of art. It is, yeah, and the classic AR-AK debate, I'm telling you, AKs can really, really be accurate, and it's fun to shoot one of those. Because most of us out there, you know, we're shooting Wassers, and we're shooting some of the 74s that are, as I mentioned, you know, in the $400 category. They used to be. They're probably six or seven now. But when you're used to that kind of stuff, and you think, wow, this is a pretty good rifle. Yeah, this works, you know. And then you have a really good one. It's like you've been driving a regular car, and then all of a sudden you get that awesome upgrade rental car, and you're like, wow, why don't I do this all the time? The AKs are spectacular.
And just in case if there's somebody that's listening to this that doesn't know what an AK-74 is, the AK-74 shoots a 5.45x39 cartridge versus the standard AK, which is 7.62x39. So I guess that 5.45 is very similar to a 223, is it not?
Yeah, very, very similar ballistically, although the 5.45 tumbles and does really nasty things when it hits something solid because it has an air pocket in the nose of the bullet, which is a nasty little cheating thing the Russians did. But I mean, it's effective. But as far as recoil goes and weight of magazines and the amount of ammunition you can carry, the 5.45x39 is very, very similar to 5.56x45. And 5.45x39 used to be really inexpensive, but now that we're not importing that stuff from Russia anymore, prices have gone up. But you can get Ukrainian 5.45x39, and so you can still get, you know, ammunition that's about as much or a little bit less than 5.56. So that's how I kind of, you know, measure it. It's not as cheap as it used to be, but it's still in the ballpark of other ammunition. So yeah, consider an AK and consider an AK-74.
Nowadays, the Ukrainians would be glad to sell it to us, even though the Russians won't, right?
Yeah, which is weird because if I were the Ukrainian government, I'd be using that on my Eastern Front right now. But anyway,
Joel, you build the AKs also, don't you?
I do. I actually started the company because of AKs. The AKs are my true love. And like Glenn said, the ARs are sort of funding the AK side of the house right now, and Glenn got to see the two demo AKs, the AKM-47 and the AK-74 that we've got built with our own barrel profile on them. And it's just, that's something that I want to put a good amount of time and effort in to make sure that when it goes out right. I don't want to halfway do something just to get it out in the market. If it takes me another 6-8 months to get it perfected, then that's how long it'll take.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you guys something. I sort of hate this question, but I'm going to ask it anyway because it always stirs a lot of popular conversation. If you could only take one, would it be the AR or the AK?
I would say AR just because of ergonomics and my familiarity.
And I'm going to take an AK just because as far as ergonomics and familiarity, it's about the same for both of me. And I just, there's something about the reliability and the simplicity of the AK that I prefer.
Yeah. What do you do special on your AK builds, Joel?
The barrel profile is really where where we've changed it. You can't put any standard components from an AK-74 on our barrel profile, with the exception of the rear sight block. Everything forward of that is more profiled like an AR barrel. So all of our AK-74s are threaded half by 78, which is your standard AR-15 muzzle threading. And there's enough shelf behind the threading that you can put any suppressor mount on there that you want. And likewise on the AK-47s, which the Russians threaded 14 and one left hand, which is a very open and a very rough thread. We're threading everything 5/8 by 24, which is your standard AR-10, 30 caliber AR threading pitch.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Any 30 caliber AR muzzle device on our AK-47, which is going to give you a whole range of muzzle devices, suppressors, and everything else that you can put on an AK-47, which really in the past hasn't been done without multiple adapters to adapt it from 14 and 1 to something else to 5/8. So I think that's a huge benefit of ours. Plus, you get a little bit more of a robust barrel. And even with a bit heavier barrel, because we're moving all of the weight from the front sight base and the gas block further back, you still balances out quite well, and you don't actually increase the weight any.
Good. That's cool.
In addition to that, you know, that we do work on the triggers of every single one of them. All the rails are polished. All the sharp edges are taken off. And it just runs a whole lot smoother and a whole lot tighter than your standard AK.
I was going to ask you to talk about the trigger. Talk about what triggers you're putting in those AKs.
We our standard trigger is a TAPCO. If there's one thing the TAPCO does well, they do AK triggers really, really well. They're a little rough, so we smooth them up, reprofile a couple areas to make them function a little bit smoother. But other than that, I mean, they make a fantastic trigger. You know, I wish they put that much effort into the rest of the stuff that they make. They'd really have something going on. So we work on the trigger a little bit. There's some companies out there that make some parts that I really enjoy. Krebs makes their aftermarket selector switch, which is fantastic, because one of the biggest complaints, at least from the right-handed people, on the AKs is that you can't put the safety on and off with your firing hand. And with the Krebs unit, you most certainly can. It really makes it a lot easier.
Gives you better
hold open too.
You can hold the bolt open.
Oh, you got a bolt hold open on yours?
Well, the Krebs has a notch built into it so that you can pull the bolt back and lock it open.
Oh yeah, I've seen that. Okay.
For cleaning and for safety reasons, and just for getting the barrel cooled off.
They're also good if you're shooting a competition carbine match and you have to unload and show clear.
Exactly. It's great to be able to lock the bolt to the rear on that. I know a lot of people really want a bolt hold open on the magazine on an AK. It's just, if you train around that, it really is not that much of an issue as far as magazine swaps and speed goes on that. That's more of a training issue than it is a functional issue.
Yeah, it probably is. Good. Thanks for talking about that. Glenn, I want to go back to something you said when we first started this interview. You said something about the government doesn't want people to have a lot of rifles in their hands. Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. Best way to put it is I've been in the room when political people are making decisions, not decisions to take over the country. I don't want to exaggerate, but they're making normal decisions. And I know the way they think, and they think about, you know, can we get away with this? Will we get unelected? Will this cause a big problem, a big fiasco that I'll get blamed for? That sort of thing. And so you have to put yourself in the mindset of a politician for this, you know, conversation to have any context. So when they're thinking, is this going to blow up in my face and be a gigantic black eye and my poll numbers go down or something? One of the best ways to have all those bad things from a political standpoint happen would be to have a bunch of violence in the streets, which nobody wants. But if you were to try to take away guns and nobody was really armed, for example, it hasn't – well, I guess it sort of has happened. But if you were Canada and you wanted to confiscate all the, double-barrel shotguns and, you know, 1890s revolvers or whatever, you know, they can have in Canada – you would know right where to go, and you would take the guns away, and it wouldn't be a big deal because who's going to do anything about it? The situation would be the exact opposite in the United States. People would not give their guns up, and they would have the ability to, and I hope peacefully, you know, stand off folks from the porch, right? We were talking about that earlier. That would be a preferred outcome. But when the population is well armed, they can resist unconstitutional and just frankly wrong things like gun confiscations. Look at every country that has had horrible dictatorships, and they have not had a Second Amendment. We're the only country I know of that Switzerland actually is also a country that has a widely dispersed set of really good functioning good firearms. And, you know, you've never heard of the brutal Swiss dictator. There's a phrase that's never appeared, right, is the brutal Swiss dictator.
True.
And there's a reason for that. And so it's really, really important. And you can read – I won't go into the sort of the history part of this, but you can read essay after essay and political writing after political writing from the late 1700s and into the early 1800s where the people who wrote the Constitution and really put this country together – talk about this very specifically, and it's an important topic. All the writings of George Washington, one of the topics that keeps rising to the top and he loved talking about was that firearms in the hands of citizens deter dictatorial governments. And he talks about it over and over again. And when George Washington says something about liberty, you should listen. You should pay attention to what's on his mind. And the private ownership of firearms definitely was on his mind. And so that's why it's important. And we've all heard about and thought about, yeah, the more guns there are, the harder it is for them to take it away. And by the way, the more voters, let me be brutally political for just a moment, the more voters out there that own AR-15s, for example, the more votes you're going to lose if you try to take them away. And trust me, politicians actually think this way. That sounds crazy what I'm saying. I'm telling you, it's how they think. So those are some reasons why AR-15s or any other good, modern, you know, effective firearm being widely, I don't know, in many, many households is a really important political deterrent. Because you know what? If the conference room at, I don't know, some elected official's office, there's a big conversation and it's, golly, we can't even think about taking these things away because it's going to cause a lot of problems and it's just going to be bad. And they say, okay, well, we're not going to do it. See, that's winning, right? We'll never know that that happened because we're in the conference room. But it means that there's not a bunch of confrontation and a bunch of firefights that don't need to happen. So it's all good. There is no downside to lots and lots of people, responsible people, owning firearms.
You know, Glenn, I would say we're probably already at that point in many states.
Mm-hmm.
In many states in this country, we're already at that point where I think politicians just probably they're going to say, we're not even going to go there. We're not going to try that because there's too many armed citizens.
Exactly right. Think about this. And there's a scene in one of the 299 Days books about this. Military people are consulted by a bad government that wants to do some bad things. You know, should we go and take the guns? No, sir, I would advise against that. And here's why. That's exactly what you want. That is winning right there, and nobody gets hurt.
Yeah, it is winning. Yeah, that's good. Thanks for putting that in there because that's true. Joel, I wanted to ask you a question. I love the name Working Man's Armory. So talk about your as best as you can without getting into too much detail. Why are these working man's rifles? Is it because they're priced right, or is it because they have the most popular features that a working man wants? Or talk a little bit more about that.
I think when you think of it, you know, your average blue-collar working guy, whether it's factory, mechanic, your guy who puts in his 40, 50, 60 hours a week at an hourly rate and has a family, it's a guy who's pretty versatile, okay, who can do pretty much anything. So I wanted the rifles to reflect that we build rifles that can handle pretty much anything that's thrown at them. And also the craftsmanship that goes into them is that has that same pride in it that a good blue collar guy puts into his job. So sort of the working man aspect came from that. And we also want to, again, to be able to provide something that the average guy can afford and still get that high-end quality that he may not be able to get from some other companies for the same price. And, you know, I've been a working guy my whole life, never had a desk job, always been on the street as a police officer in the field when I was overseas. And, you know, I have this isn't a wholly full-time, it's pretty close to full-time for me, but I've got another job, too, where I'm just another worker in a group of them. So it's sort of a reflection of me and a reflection of where I want the business to go.
I think it's cool, because if you buy one of Joel's rifles, you're going to be buying from another working man, and that's good.
No doubt about that.
Yeah. So I would not be doing you a very good service if I didn't ask you to tell people, how do you get a working man's armory rifle?
You can go to, we've got two websites. We've got our informational website, which is www.workingmansarmory.com, and that's got links on it as well to our web store, which is shop.workingmansarmory.com, or you can just straight up email me at joel@workingmansarmory.com, and I'll handle any questions, concerns, builds. We'll talk for 30 or 40 minutes about what you want to do, whatever it takes. That's what I do.
Yeah, good. So they're going to be purchasing them directly from you.
Correct. Yeah, everyone is built by me in my shop, and it's shipped by me, and it's quality checked by me. So if there's something wrong with it, it's my fault, and you know who to call.
I think that's great. I mean, how many places can you buy any kind of a weapon and you can actually talk to the guy who built it? It's rare.
And I think what's really nice is that, you know, I've got standard rifles on the website and standard pistols on the website, but if you want something tweaked on it or you want something changed, that's not an issue at all. Like I said, you just shoot me an email and we'll make it happen.
Good. Glenn, anything you want to add?
No, that's it. I can just say this. I guess I will add one thing. And there was something about when that box opened up and I saw that 17th Irregulars logo on an AR lower, it was kind of the fulfillment of a lot of things. I had these ideas in my mind. There would be these guys, the 17th Irregulars, and then to see that was really cool. So I want to thank Joel for making that. I know this is a cliche, but it's true. That vision, a reality. It was this thing in my head, and now it's on lowers of AR-15s, and it's very, very cool, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, you know, Glenn, I think that's how a lot of things start. You know, people have a vision, and then they just take the next step and the next step and the next step, and pretty soon it becomes a reality. I mean, that's how my podcast came about. You know, I had some thoughts and some things in my head, and I was kind of like you, Glenn. I thought, all right, I'm going to put this out there. No one's going to listen to it, but I might get maybe a half a dozen of my buddies to listen to it, and, you know, I'll probably just do it for a little while and then quit. And then here I am 4.5 years later, nearly 300 episodes, and thousands of people every week, and it's like, wow, how did this happen? You know,
I know what you're talking about.
Probably the same thing with your book, right?
Exactly right.
Good. Joel, I'll give you the last word.
I really appreciate you having me on, and I try and stay humble, but Glenn's exactly right. That 17th Irregular rifle with the engraving on the side is a pretty sweet little unit, and I really can't wait until we put it into full production here in the next month or two and start getting it out there. I think it'll do great for both of us, and I think a lot of people are going to be really happy with what they end up with.
Good. I appreciate you, both you guys, giving us your time. Thanks a lot, and shoot straight and shoot safe, okay?
Thank you, Bob.
Thanks, Bob.
Take care, guys.
An exciting training opportunity is coming to Sioux Falls on May 16th and 17th, 2015, Beyond Concealed Carry Enhanced. This 16-hour course is designed for the concealed carrier who is slightly more advanced but has never had any formal training outside of the CCW course. We start with the basics of handgun safety and marksmanship and quickly progress to some basic dynamic movement and defensive scenarios. Some scenarios would include shooting from cover and proper use of cover, shooting on the move, shooting steel on the move, defending hallways, one-handed shooting, the art of making hits quickly out of the holster, shooting a hostage taker, and more. You will shoot a minimum of 500 rounds of ammunition. Bring a quality handgun with at least 3 magazines, holster, belt, and magazine pouches. Revolvers and .22 caliber pistols are welcome. Both Bob and Ben are NRA-certified pistol instructors and have been for several years. Bob has been the host of the Handgun World podcast for 4 years and has over 120 hours of training under his belt. Ben has several years of Marine combat experience and several years of carrying a gun as an armored car driver. This class will be held in Sioux Falls, May 16th and 17th, 2015, from 8:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. both days. Cost is $350 per person, or sign up by December 31st and save $50. Look for the training link at handgunworld.com.
Okay, wasn't that good stuff? Many thanks to Glenn Tate and Joel once again. Their website, I'll repeat it again, is workingmansarmory.com. Workingmansarmory.com. And of course, for Glenn's books, you can go to 299days.com. And also, don't forget to use my Amazon store to buy Glenn's book or anything else you want to purchase on Amazon. If you use my Amazon store link, you'll help support the show, and it doesn't even cost you any extra money because you were going to buy something on Amazon anyway, right? So just go to handgunworld.com, click the link that's on the page at the Amazon store. This last segment, I'm driving home from a shooting match. I went to a carbine match up in Austin, and I shot my pistol in a carbine match, which is kind of fun. I like to do that because it's very challenging stages. There's some advantages and disadvantages. Some of the stages, you know, the targets are quite a ways away, 20 and 25-yard shots, because you're supposed to be shooting it with a carbine. And I shot it with a handgun. So that's what makes it challenging. But what's also really cool is in many stages, I can load my pistol all the way to the maximum magazine capacity. So I shot my M&P Pro 9mm with 17 rounds in the magazine, one in the chamber. So I was starting a lot of stages with 18 rounds. And I'll put some videos up on Facebook. If you follow me on Facebook or my YouTube channel, I'll put them on both. I can be found at Handgun World on YouTube, and also I can be found at Handgun World on Facebook. I'll put some videos up there of a couple of stages. It is kind of fun being able to load magazines all the way up to the maximum with one in the chamber, because let's face it, that's how we all carry anyway, right? We carry, or we have our home defense handguns set up fully loaded, or at least you should. That's what's nice, but I am glad that I have my long slide pistol, because some of those 20 and 25 yard shots would have been pretty tough with a shorter slide pistol. I could have done it, but it would have been a lot harder. And I really like my M&P Pro 9mm. I really like it. Came out of the box with a green fiber optic front sight, straight black rear sight. I like that. The gun's a very smooth shooter. I picked up a couple of extra, actually I picked up three extra magazines. I have five magazines now for it. I'm going to try to get another five or six magazines pretty quickly. I love it. And today I was running a CompTac, I think it's called the International Competition Holster. It's an outside-the-waistband, IDPA-approved competition holster. And I was using the CompTac single mag pouches as well. I like the single mag pouches. That's just kind of what I've been using. And I like it because I can put it anywhere on my belt as long as it's in the correct position for IDPA rules. So I like it. Very, very smooth shooting. I would compare it to a Glock 34 as being equal. I think they're equal guns. So whatever fits you best, whatever you like best, Glock 34 or an M&P Pro 9mm. I will give the nod to Smith & Wesson for out of the box with a real nice trigger, a lot better than they used to be. But more importantly, the sights on that gun. The fiber optic green front sight and the plain black rear. Those are decent sights. And this is the first match I've shot with it. So before I give a full review on it, I want to shoot it at least two or three more competition matches. But if you ever get a chance to go shoot a carbine match, in other words, a match that's set up for using an AR-15 or an AK or a Ruger Mini 14, you know, small carbines like that, try shooting at once with a pistol. See if they'll let you do that. They do that here with Texas Tactical, where I shoot. I like doing that because it's very challenging. But also, I get to practice quite a bit with fully loaded magazines. And that's fun because that's the way I'm going to be defending myself, is with a handgun that has fully loaded magazines. Well, thanks for tuning in to another episode of your Handgun World podcast. That's it for this episode. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun. because I can't carry a cop. And don't forget to join our Shooters Club for only $8 a month or $75 a year. You can access excellent training videos that Ben and I put together. That's it, folks. Shoot straight, shoot safe. I'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
You know, if you think about it, we've you're right. There's never been a brutal Swiss dictator. So Glenn, you made that up, and you're going to continue to use that.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. Yeah, I mean, you normally don't say anything goofy unless you're talking with John Hathaway.
Oh, that was horrible. That I'll tell you, that whole thing devolved, man. And I tell you, Hathaway, well, you've been around him. He's a different guy. I don't know what his IQ is, but it's like in the four digits. He's extremely smart and evil combination. He's a fun guy, though. No, that was we were goofy. Yeah. Sorry, Joel, you don't know what we're talking about.